Welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here again to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, we have an open line now for you at 1-800-462-7413. Along with your calls, some interesting topics to talk about.
Yes, heartbreaks. When you break up with somebody and your heart breaks, is that related at all to the pain sensation that you feel when maybe you touch a hot stove or you prick yourself with a needle? That might be interesting. We'll talk about some MRI research about that. And we're going to talk about the CDC new study that shows you can shorten TB treatment for those who are at risk. We're going to talk a bit about TB. It's an old disease that still bothers a number of Americans.
Yeah, we almost think it's gone away. We hardly ever talk
every
about
time, every time it wants to go away, it doesn't go away. Yeah. And worldwide, TB kills 2 million people a year. It's the number one infectious disease killer worldwide.
Our recipe?
Our recipe is a great recipe. It's raisin oat muffins. If you like muffins, stay tuned because this recipe is for you.
And we have a really, really interesting medical myth buster coming up later in the hour, too. Lots of great reasons for you to stick with us. To the phones we go now. We welcome a caller in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, thanks for taking my call. I'm an aging runner, and I'm training for a marathon. And I'll tell you, the older I get, the more reasons I seem to have to take ibuprofen. So my question or questions relate to the, I guess, the short-term benefits of taking that, perhaps before an event and after for recovery, and then what the long-term risks are of taking ibuprofen.
Yeah, just out of curiosity, you self-identify as an aging runner. How old are you?
46, but with the wind chill, I feel 50.
I love it. Yeah. I just love it. That's it. You know, age is a relative term. I always say that that people who are 25, if somebody is 25 years older than you are today, that's old. You know, it's always, you know, you remember when you were five, you know, old was like 20 or 25. But, you know, as your body gets older, it needs different things. And, you know, and when you're in your 20s and 30s, your joints don't ache. And as you get older, there's some wear and tear there. And you do notice a difference. And ibuprofen and naproxen, over-the-counter naproxen, are really, I think, a boon. Very, very useful. Long-term problems, well, you know, for some people, they cause gastric distress. There are a number of people who get GI bleeds in the country from anti-inflammatory drugs. There's a risk, but in somebody in their 40s, pretty low risk. Somebody in their 80s, much higher risk, certainly. One of the other risks can be kidney dysfunction. For somebody who's otherwise healthy, it's a pretty low risk. And that's really why the FDA put these things over-the-counter without a prescription. In fact, aspirin, old-fashioned aspirin, Anacin, Alka-Seltzer that has aspirin in it, probably is a higher risk than ibuprofen, you know, or Aleve. So my recommendation is, you know, take it as needed. Not every day, but take it as needed. I do. I'm a skier. I love skiing. I never ski without taking some naproxen. I like that a little bit better because it's just a little bit longer acting, but they both work just as well. You're taking it how often? How many times a week are you taking it?
Well, it kind of depends. If I've got an inflammation going or something, I may take it, you know, that way 3 times a day. But I'm really trying to minimize it. I had an aunt that took a lot of it, and I think a doctor told her to look at it like matches, that you have just so many, and she had kind of burned all of hers up.
Yeah, I don't think I would say you only have so many years of ibuprofen, or because it really does not have an additive effect. If you take an anti-inflammatory today, every time you take it, you run a very small risk that anti-inflammatory is going to cause a problem. But there's no, to my knowledge, additive risk. Now, from the kidney dysfunction point of view, I guess there's a risk because you look at kidney function tests. They can be elevated. Some doctors say, look, if you're on it every day, we're going to take a comprehensive metabolic panel and look at your kidneys every 6 months or once a year. And that's a very conservative way of looking at it. But getting back to your risk as a 40 40-some-year-old runner, I think the real issue is how do you keep on doing your sport? Mm-hmm. Because if you can't do your sport, you have a risk of cardiac disease from that. And also, it's not fun, you know? I mean, I don't like to ski with pain. I like to ski without pain. So, you know, we take risks every day. I think your risk is minimal, and I think you should keep on running.
What about taking it beforehand? I have some friends that swear if they start taking it the week before their marathon that they'll have a better race, less, I guess, likelihood of cramping up and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts on that?
Yeah, for a number of people, having it on board before the run, I think definitely has a benefit. I don't know if there's any long-term benefit. Look at their numbers. Look at their times, and that might give you the answer.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thanks.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. To Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, we go now. Hello.
Hello.
What's up?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I recently heard on your show about some information that came out on a study that pertained to proton pump inhibitors or Prilosec, Nexium, those sorts of things,
mm-hmm.
and their potential effect for respiratory distress. And I've been taking those drugs for quite a few years, 10 or 12 years now, daily. And I have, in fact, noticed an increase in respiratory issues. So I was interested in the correlation
mm-hmm.
and also interested in the possibility of weaning off the drug. If I don't take it for a day now, it's nearly unbearable, the acid reflux. So.
Uh-huh. Well, the respiratory issues are not shortness of breath that people get with it, but it seems to be that in certainly a subgroup of senior citizens, that if they take Prilosec every day, they run an increased risk for pneumonia, and that's really where the studies are looking at. And it may be that we need a little acid sort of at the top of our esophagus where it's sort of, if you will, breaks with the trachea in the back of our mouth, we may need a little acid to kill some bacteria. And so that's the issue. It's not respiratory distress as much as it is, you know, what's happening from a pneumonia point of view. Are we causing pneumonias with a drug? But the drugs are incredibly important. If you look at a Zantac, which is not a proton pump inhibitor, it's an H2 blocker, it's called. And then you look at proton pump inhibitors, they both work in the stomach. They both reduce pain dramatically for people who have GERD, a gastroesophageal reflux disease. And I think the way to do it is as needed. So if you find you need it every day, I would stay on it. But a lot of people stay on it and they don't need it every day. You know, they say, well, I haven't had acid reflux in 5-10 years, and I've been on it every day. Well, that's great, but have you gone off of it to see whether or not you need to be on it? And the answer is what you're doing. So you're off of it for a day, and the pain becomes unbearable.
If I take it in the morning, and if I notice that by 2 or 3 in the afternoon, or especially with an evening meal, if I had forgotten to take it that morning, then I have a terrible bouts of acid reflux through the evening and through the night.
Yeah, I definitely would stay on it. Now, if you're concerned about specifically these proton pump inhibitors that are very powerful, you could go to Zantac, you know, on an as-needed basis and just switch over to Zantac. Or have you done that? Have you been on Zantac, Ranitidine?
I have not. I'm wondering what the difference is between...
Well, it's a different drug. It works in a different way. It doesn't have the same effects. And why don't you see if that works? You can buy it over the counter, and I'd recommend 150 milligrams twice a day and just see if that works for you. If that works for you, then I would use that intermittently. And if you have bad days, then you use the proton pump inhibitor. The H2 blockers, Zantac, Tagamet, Pepcid, are not associated with the same pneumonia-like activity because they don't block acid the same way the proton pump inhibitor does.
Well, that's good to know. Okay, thank you.
Good luck. Good luck. Hope your tummy stays well.
I'm sure it will. Thank you so much.
I appreciate the call.
Sure.
At 800-462-7413, a line open now for you if you'd like to join in. So, Zorba, if we have suffered, as we probably all have, heartbreak It's what, very similar to actual physical pain?
Absolutely. And that's exactly what this study looked at. The study looked at different parts of the brain that are essentially affected by the MRI scan. The MRI scan looks at the brain and looks at which parts are sort of lit up. And this was a study of 40 people, college students. They had gone through a romantic breakup in the last 6 months. All said their breakups led to intense feelings of pain and rejection. In fact, when I read this study, I thought, oh my God, intense feelings of pain and rejection. I immediately thought about when a girl broke up with me, you know, years ago, Betsy Balsam. I mean, you know, this is like 40 years ago, and I can still think about when she broke up with me and how unhappy I was, but that's what it is. And so what they did was they viewed photos of an ex-partner, thought about their breakup, and they did MRI scans. They viewed a photo of a friend who thought about a positive experience. So in other words, a friend who, you know, who they might like in a positive way. And then they wore an arm device that created tolerable pain, this pain sensation with physical reactions like a little pincher device. And they looked at which part of the brain lights up, and guess what? A romantic breakup lights up right where the pain feels when you have physical pain in the body.
It doesn't feel the same, though.
I think it feels worse, don't you?
Well, it depends.
Yeah, it depends on the breakup.
Yeah, and that's the physical
exactly
pain.
I mean, but I have to tell you, I don't remember physical pain from 40 years ago. I just remember the mental pain of Becky Balsam. How could she possibly dump me? I mean, I was the perfect person. I mean, really, why should she dump me? I mean, I was a pre-medical student. I had everything going for me, and that was it. But I don't remember hurting my ankle or my foot or my back.
Well,
so clearly there's a memory.
She's sorry
issue.
Now. She had her chance.
Maybe she's listening.
1-800-462-7413. A listener in St. Louis with us now, Zorba. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, I'm Betsy Balsam.
I love it.
Uh-oh.
You guys have a great sense of humor. I love listening to you.
You do, too.
I am calling today because I have a question about adjusting to braces. I have a niece who is not as old as your prior callers. Mm-hmm. And she was, you know, just 18 and decided to get braces. And she has not been able to eat. And she's a person who loves to eat. Somehow she can't make the adjustment of the irritation from the braces rubbing on the inside of her mouth when she chews. Mm-hmm. So she has settled for really soft things like yogurt, smoothies pretty much every day. That's the only way I've ever really seen her eat fruit, though, is because of the smoothies. And for a person who loves to eat, is there some way that you can break into having more solid foods in your diet, especially if you've been accustomed to them?
Yeah. How long has she had these braces?
I'd say now she's had them about 10 months.
10 months, and she still is only eating yogurt and things.
Yeah, yeah, she's only eating soft stuff.
Yeah, has she gone back to? I mean, I've had braces in my life, and you know, they can feel a little uncomfortable if you've got wires on them and they stick out. There is wax that you buy at the pharmacy, and you put wax over the wires, and it actually usually smooths things out.
I mean, I think that she probably has enough empty wax packets that she could, you know, make some kind of craft out of.
A craft out of wax packets for braces in your mouth. I can just see it.
Yeah.
I can just see it at the local county, our local county fair. She gone back to her orthodontist and talked to her about the braces? I mean, that's pretty bad.
She has. Mm-hmm. She has, and each time she gets more wax packets.
Take two wax packets and call me in the morning.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, that's hysterical. Well, first of all, we all like solid food. Nobody likes to eat liquid food all the time. It's not natural for humans just to eat liquid food. I mean, we like it every so often, but if I just had milkshakes every day, it would not you know, it wouldn't be nearly as satisfying. You know, the answer really is if the braces are that bad and the orthodontist is not, you know, is not responding to her, the question is, should she go to a different orthodontist? That's, you know, she's already, she's probably not going to do that because usually you sign a whole contract for the whole thing. And the answer might be just to tough it out until the braces are gone. I mean, the wax is part of the answer. And if the wax doesn't work, I don't know what you would do because you've got this metal or you have plastic in your mouth with metal wires.
So. It's the metal, I think.
Yeah. How long is she going to be on braces?
Somehow I thought it was to be 2 years.
Yeah, that's usually what it is. It's usually 2 years. So, I mean, she's only a quarter of the way into that or half. She's not even halfway into that with that. So the wax is part of the answer. Going back to the dentist, having them snip the wires, the orthodontist, having them snip the wires so they're even closer. Those are things she has to do. And then how old is she?
Well, she just turned 19. A couple weeks ago.
Is she a finicky eater? You said she likes to eat, but is she finicky about textures? Was she finicky before?
She likes broccoli.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
As far as being finicky, like I said, the fruits she didn't really deal with. So the blessing is that we get the fruits in her system because she loves the smoothies. But she's a person, you know, she loves cheese.
So she can't eat any of that stuff, huh?
We haven't figured out a way to get that in there. We might be able to sneak some broccoli into the smoothies.
Oh.
But the meats and things like that, she recognizes that she's going to pay. And so she really pretty much doesn't bother them. I mean, she will eat veggies if they're, you know, pretty well cooked, but then... Don't you lose most of the nutrients?
You do, but you've got to do whatever you have to do until you're done with those, you know, done with those braces. So good luck. Encourage her. And once again, make that, I want to see that wax craft when it's all done.
Okay. I'll make sure I tell her that. Maybe she can do it as her summer project.
wax packet towers.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye. Broccoli smoothie.
No. Broccoli tofu smoothie. Good.
Before the break, Zorba, let's take this quick note from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox from a listener and his wife. The listener, Brad, and his wife have the same problem, hair loss. Brad writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, my wife, 45, and I, 52, both suffer from alopecia. Is this a coincidence, or might there be a common, environmental, cause? My wife's symptoms are more severe. My symptoms have responded to steroid therapy, but none of the specialists we've seen have been able to isolate a cause."
Well, we don't know the cause for baldness, certainly in women. In men, there's, of course, a genetic cause. If it runs in the family, you're going to have it. If it doesn't run in the family, you're not. But I think it's coincidental. I don't think there's anything environmental. I mean, we do know you certainly can get hair loss from things such as radiation poisoning. Obviously, that's not the case.
No.
So, I'm trying to think of something in the environment that would produce it, and I can't imagine it.
So probably not at all.
Probably not at all, and, you know, like you said, you've gone to specialists, and they haven't given you an answer, and the answer is, I don't have an answer either.
If there is an environmental cause, then stay out of the Zorba Pastor on Your Health studios.
That's right, because we have alopecia around here, too. And let me tell you, it's catchy.
Even if you share a lifestyle problem, we want to hear from you. Just send your questions, comments, and tips to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have a good recipe coming up. You'll want to stick around for that. We'll be taking lots more of your calls, of course, some more interesting research to talk over. Our medical myth buster, too, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number is 1-800-462-7413. But before we get back to the phones, recipe time. This one, I guess, Zorba, a good breakfast recipe, raisin oat muffin.
Yes. Do you like muffins?
I do.
Oh, yeah, I like muffins. And so I'm always looking for a good new muffin recipe, something to sort of that I can kick off my morning with. Muffins, a good cup of coffee, maybe a morning newspaper.
Yeah.
Sunny weather.
Yeah.
Nothing to do for the rest of the day.
There you go.
Yeah, see?
Yeah.
Now, I may not have any of the rest of the stuff, but I certainly can make the muffin.
Right.
You know, that I have control over. So I think it's a good recipe, good muffin recipe. I think I'd consider it. Start out with 1.5 cups of whole wheat pastry flour.
Cup and a half of whole wheat pastry flour.
Now, we're using whole wheat because it has fiber, which we need. Pastry, a flour is cut. It's made differently than bread flour, so pastry flour is going to give you a lighter, fluffier result.
Mm-hmm.
3/4 of a cup of old-fashioned oats.
3/4 of a cup of old-fashioned oats.
What are new-fashioned oats?
They're
always old-fashioned.
Instant. And,
instant. Yeah, I think that's what it must be. Yeah. Old-fashioned oats are not instant. I wonder what they put in that instant stuff to make it instant. Bad stuff, right?
Yeah, it must be.
Can't be good if it's easy, right? It must be. But they do cut them differently. The old-fashioned oats have a different cut. 1/4 cup of sugar.
1/4 cup of sugar.
You could certainly use honey in this if you wanted to. It would give you a different taste, but you certainly could do that. 2 teaspoons of baking powder.
2 little tea baking powder.
3/4 of a teaspoon of baking soda.
3/4 of a little tea baking soda.
1 teaspoon of salt.
1 little tea salt.
1/2 teaspoon of cinnamon.
1/2 little tea cinnamon.
1/2 teaspoon of nutmeg.
1/2 little tea nutmeg.
Now, a recommendation for cinnamon and nutmeg, buy your cinnamon in small containers because it'll stay fresher and actually will give a better sort of aromatic flavor. Nutmeg, buy your nutmeg as a nut. And what you do is you then grate the nut. It's a very soft nut. And you grate it, and the whole room will smell like nutmeg. It's really a – if you ever – you're looking at me with this quizzical eye, like, is nutmeg a nut?
No, I mean, but you don't buy it that way. You buy it in a little can. And then
you buy – no, bottle. Bottle. Well, I buy mine in a bottle. And then you shake the bottle, and you go, what's this? And then you put the nut.
Yeah.
No, you don't buy the nuts. Nobody eats – I don't think anyone eats nutmegs like cashews. No. But anyway, getting back, 1 cup of buttermilk.
Cup of buttermilk.
Now, do you think buttermilk is like an old thing? I mean, my dad used to drink buttermilk, but –
I never liked buttermilk, but it was more around when I was younger.
I think it was around now. Now you don't see it at all.
Yeah.
You can buy instant buttermilk, and we have some in our house. So it comes in a – it's like, you know, non-fat dry milk. You buy buttermilk, and so it's always there. You can also – a substitute is using 1 tablespoonful of white vinegar or 1 tablespoonful of lemon juice with 1 cup of your regular milk, and you let it stand for a few minutes. And it gives a similar taste.
It becomes buttermilk?
Well, not exactly. It becomes buttermilk-like.
Oh, okay.
You know what it is? It's ersatz buttermilk.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to use the word ersatz in a sentence for a long time.
Very good.
Wasn't it right?
Well done.
Miss Schutte. Schutte would be so excited with the ersatz.
Right.
Now, I know the grammar police are going to say I probably am not using it correct. It's not exactly.
Oh, no, I think that's perfect.
Don't you think it's
perfect?
Yeah,
that's perfect. Absolutely.
I hope they attack you next time. That's what I hope. Because you've agreed.
Well, I hope they
ersatz.
Do, too.
That's right. That's right. But anyway, once again, powdered buttermilk, so you don't need the ersatz variety.
Right.
We've now said it 3 times. Okay. 1/3 of a cup of honey.
1/3 of a cup of honey.
So once again, you're going to have honey, but you can make it all honey if you want.
Yeah.
1/2 stick of butter.
1/2 stick of butter.
2 large eggs.
2 large eggs.
And then you're going to throw in 3/4 cup of golden raisins.
Some golden raisins.
Right. Now, you could use craisins. Do you like craisins?
Yeah.
Craisins are good. You could also take prunes if you want prunes. And prunes are dried plums.
Yeah.
And I happen to like prunes. You have to be careful, of course, with those prunes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can cut up prunes and you could put prunes in there, too. You could also use carrots. You could chop up carrots. I don't think I would do that, but you could.
Yeah.
Make it kind of like a carroty.
You can do whatever you want.
Preheat the oven to 375 degrees.
Yeah.
and grease the muffin pan. Yeah. Yes, you can do anything you want.
Yeah.
Now, in a large bowl, whisk together all the dry ingredients. In a separate bowl, whisk together the buttermilk, honey, butter, and eggs. Mm-hmm. Then add the dry ingredients and fold it into the wet ingredients. And then fold in the raisins or carrots or mm-hmm. whatever you want to put in there into the entire mixture. Stir just to combine. Don't overstir it. Pour the batter evenly into greased muffin pan, little muffin pan cups. Bake for 17 to 20 minutes or until a toothpick comes out clean. Mm-hmm. Cool on a rack. And serve.
Mm-hmm. These are. This has a lot of sugar, and it has.
Yeah. Well, when we do the analysis, each muffin is 200 calories.
Yeah.
So it's not a low calorie dish, but right. it is 200 calories. So if you eat four muffins, 2 times 4 is 800 calories.
Right.
You can eat those many muffins.
No, one.
One. That's right. Do yeah. one muffin. It's got a little bit of sodium in there. It's got, believe it or not, it's got 12% of the protein you need for the day, and that must come from the egg for
yeah.
the most part.
Yeah.
But it's a good recipe if you like muffins, and I like muffins.
Good breakfast.
Yes. A delicious one.
I wonder if there's a way listeners could get this recipe.
You know, I think if they come to our website at zorbapastor.org, they can get this recipe. They can search our archives for all our other recipes. They can download their recipe on their iPod, and they can actually find us on Facebook. That's zorbapastor.org.
one 800 462 7413 is our toll-free number. 800 462 7413. Now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Lexington, Kentucky. Hi.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much for taking my call.
We appreciate the call. How can we help?
Well, my husband tested for high triglycerides a few months ago, and we've done all the obvious things. He stopped drinking soda, and we switched to whole grain everything. But he can't really avoid sugar entirely, since even broccoli has sugar in it. So is there a number we should be shooting for, as in grams of sugar per day, to kind of help bring that number down?
Let me get back for a question. Triglycerides really are, if you will, they're the most sensitive blood lipid levels that we look at. We look at cholesterol. We look at the LDL, which is the bad cholesterol, the low density. We look at the HDL and the good cholesterol, and then we look at triglycerides. But where did you get the sugar link that it's just sugar you should be looking for?
Well, that's what the doctor said, because mm-hmm. his cholesterol numbers are all really good.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor said he needs to, you know, cut down on the sugar mm-hmm. and that would help.
Yeah. Is he overweight?
A little bit, but not, you know, he's mm-hmm. in his 30s, so mm-hmm. he's got that adult weight going on.
He's got the adult weight. In other words, once you're over 18, you start to have the adult weight. In college, I think they called it the freshman 20 or something, because you went to college and you started putting on your adult weight. I don't think sugar is the issue. I think the issue is just overall health. I mean, you know, if you're looking for sugar in broccoli, you have gone off the deep end, because broccoli, I'm sorry, I don't think of broccoli as a fruit. I think of broccoli as sort of, you know, the quintessential vegetable. So I think getting off the soda is good. Was he drinking regular soda?
Oh, yeah. He was drinking at least a can or two a day.
Yeah. So, I mean, regular soda, it's just good, because regular soda is junk food. I mean, you're drinking 20, 30 teaspoons of sugar a day. So eating a more healthy diet, eating a diet that has more whole grains, more fruits and vegetables, I think are important. I don't think I would just look at sugar. That's not the way I think of triglycerides. I think of it as more of a heart-healthy Mediterranean diet. Have you heard of the Mediterranean diet?
Yeah, that's like olive oil and
whole
grain.
And it's looking at whole grains. It's looking at where you eat protein, what sort of protein you eat, when you have fish, when you have dairy products, and so on. I think I would look at a more Mediterranean diet. And frankly, I think that'll make a difference. Triglycerides often take 4 to 6 months to change when you've changed your diet. So don't get tested too soon. And I think I wouldn't just eliminate sugar, but I would eliminate useless sugar. But if you're going after broccoli, pick something else to shoot at. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
800-462-7413.
I think, Tom, that is the first time that I have ever thought of broccoli as a junk food.
That's the way I usually think of it, actually.
Actually, right. That's right. You do think of it as a junk food.
Before we get to our break, Zorba, let's play another round of the ever so popular Stump the Doc. Our contestant today is Vince, who's getting a little tongue-tied. He writes, I used to have a very coated tongue. After I stopped eating meat and eat very little bread, my tongue has no residue on it and is nice and pink. Can you address why this could happen?
Well, some people have coated tongues and some do not. And for the most part, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean disease. People look at their tongues in the mirror and they will look at it, what's called a geographic tongue. And there are some diseases that occur with the tongue that we look at. But for the most part, it's just variation. Whatever he's eating is probably taking off the top surface of his tongue so it looks fresh and pink. But I don't know if you really have to look at your tongue. When was the last time you, was the last time you looked in the mirror, stuck out your tongue and looked at it?
Nobody's ever said, really nice tongue.
That Tom, look at his tongue. It rocks. That's right. It rocks. Or look at that babe on the street or look at that guy in the street. They have beautiful tongues.
Is there anything healthier or less healthy about a coated or not coated?
No. The coating for the most part.
Just bragging rights.
Just bragging rights. That's right.
Want to give your lifestyle problems a licking or think you can stump Public Radio's favorite family doc? Just send your questions to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have some interesting research to talk over. Lots more of your calls coming up. Our medical myth buster, too. Hang around with us, won't you? Here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, some new information on treatment of tuberculosis.
Right. TB is the number one infectious disease killer worldwide. Kills about 2 million people.
That's so shocking because we never talk about it.
Well, we don't talk about it because in the U.S. and in Western Europe and in other developing countries, TB has been dropping. It drops when people have better food, when they have better living quarters so they're not next to one another. Good testing drops it. And most of the TB in this country occurs in the poor, indigent, people with HIV/AIDS, people from Southeast Asia, I mean, you know, Tibetans, these are people who have TB. And I'm actually involved in a TB project with Tibetans to try to wipe out TB among Tibetans in the refugee population in India and Nepal. And it turns out it's the number one killer of Tibetans, and it's very, very high in that population because they have no natural immunity. So here's the problem. You go in and you get tested for TB with a skin test, and the test is positive. Right. But you don't have an active cough. So you don't have active TB, but you have something called latent TB. It means you came into contact with the bug, you fought it off, you know, successfully. But there is a chance that you will actually develop the disease, about a 5, 10%, maybe a little bit more chance that over your lifetime you're going to develop active TB. So right now it's been recommended that you take a drug called INH, which is an antibiotic for TB, for 9 months. A pill for 9 months. You've got to take a vitamin B6 along with it for 9 months. But a lot of people stop. You know, they'll take it for a few months and then they just, you know, don't want to take this pill anymore. So this was a trial that looked at a new method. And the new method was taking, instead of taking the old drug INH, it was adding a drug called rifampin and taking it for only 3 months. And lo and behold, it was successful. And we might, there were about 12,000 people in the U.S. who had active tuberculosis last year. If we start treating people with latent tuberculosis, we might drop that in half, you know. Anytime we can drop a disease is in half, it's a big issue. It's a big issue.
Now, this is information, obviously, that doctors need to have because the people don't
No, no. But one of the issues with TB is that when people have tuberculosis, they often stop taking their medications.
Yeah.
They'll take it, and there's something called directly observed therapy where they take their medicines. But the, this is information for doctors, but it's good information for people.
I'm not saying we shouldn't talk about it, but I'm asking is, do you think doctors really are going to know about this?
Well, I think the answer is yes. The doctors who treat TB, for the most part, is usually treated now by clinics where doctors are have enough TB cases to there to be the experts, if you will, in their area with TB. So anyone who has traveled in Southeast Asia or may have come into contact with TB should be tested. And if your skin tests positive, get the new regime.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. And, Zorba, here's a listener now in Sweetwater, New Jersey. Hello.
Hi, Dr. Zorba. How are you?
Good, thank you. Good, thank you. How can we help you?
Well, for about 6 months now, I've been fatigued and experiencing inflammation in both of my hands and in my legs, specifically beneath where my knees are, both legs. I had a hip implant a year ago. I do, in fact, have a Depue hip implant, but it is not the one that's been recalled. So I have gotten increasingly worse. I'm barely able to move around some days. And for an otherwise healthy 53-year-old woman, it's pretty disheartening. I eat a healthy diet. I am very active. I don't take any medications, supplements. You know, I'm really a pretty clean liver, probably 60% organic diet. Mm-hmm. Void of red meat and pork. Can't figure out what the heck is happening in my body.
So in your you've had a hip replacement, which went well. Your hip is okay.
Perfectly well. Less than a week later, I was moving around without a walker.
Excellent.
Did all my physical therapy rehab. It was great.
Good work. Yeah, they're wonderful. They really are incredible things in medicine. Both when you talk about your hands and legs, let's talk about your hands. Are they swelling up? Are they red? Are they warm?
They're not warm. Mm-hmm. One morning, I woke up with a trigger finger in each hand, a pinky on one hand and an index finger on the other. The base of the pinky finger, that little fleshy pad on your palm, is quite sore
will
just get a sharp shooting pain sometimes.
Okay.
Both fingers are stiff in the morning, as are the rest of my hands, but those two fingers in particular are more swollen and stiff.
Oh, sure. And osteoarthritis, which you undoubtedly have if you had a hip replacement, you get this morning stiffness that usually works out after 15 to 30 minutes. A couple other things. You taking anything, any anti-inflammatories or Tylenol?
Not really. Nope. And I've tried, on occasion to take them, but they haven't done anything, so I don't bother.
Yeah. A couple of suggestions. First of all, if it were me, I would give higher dose anti-inflammatories a trial. When I say higher dose, I mean I wouldn't take one Aleve. I like Aleve generic just because it's a 12-hour drug versus ibuprofen, which is an 8-hour drug. And what I would try initially is I just see if I could get over this with anti-inflammatories. I just do it, kind of an experiment. And I would take two Aleve twice a day. And I'd do it for a month to 6 weeks. See what happens. See if you feel better. That's one possibility. In which case, then the question is, do you need to be on that much or can you be on less? Number two, the question is, do you have a different form of arthritis that's affecting you? Is it possible that you might have rheumatoid arthritis in addition to your osteoarthritis? And the only way to diagnose that is, to go to your local family doc, internist, or rheumatologist and really see if something else is going on.
I actually have had a number of tests done.
Mm-hmm.
All of the rheumatologic tests came back negative. Uh-huh. They drew 30 vials of blood. I had x-rays of every joint. That showed nothing. I had an MRI of my hands. All negative.
So you've gone through that. Now, when we look at anti-inflammatories, how long were you on them for?
I have taken a high-dose Aleve prescription strength occasionally, okay. not with okay. any regularity.
Yeah, I love anti-inflammatories. I mean, I just think they're great drugs. They don't have the side effects of narcotics, for instance. They have to be watched. They don't have to be watched carefully. Most people tolerate them. They can cause GI bleeds, and they can cause other, other problems such as kidney problems. But most people tolerate them, 98%, 99% of the population. And it sounds and smells to me like you've got osteoarthritis and it's just affecting other joints. We have no cure for osteoarthritis. There's no arthritis cure, even though it's up on the web and it's in the bookstores if you can find it, or on Amazon.com or on your Kindle. Foods don't seem to affect it, but anti-inflammatories in a good dosage, such as 2-ALLEVE twice a day, I would try that for 6 weeks and see if you can get your life back. That's what I would do. Second thing, not drug, yoga, going to yoga, doing Tai Chi, going to a kinesiologist or movement specialist to see what sort of exercise you can do. Very, very useful on that. Third possibility would be looking at something either such as acupuncture, or we talk about it periodically, Qi, which is an energy sort of energy where you direct energy in your body, sometimes can actually help. And those would be the options that it is. But I think it's osteoarthritis. That's what it sounds like to me.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Zorba, it's time once again for our medical MythBuster. We have a listener myth today from Stephanie in Appleton, Wisconsin, about pregnancy. Stephanie writes, "I'm pregnant 2 months after giving birth to my last child. I take only a prenatal vitamin. I heard that my iron could be lower from the fact that I just gave birth, and my body would have been trying to go back to normal levels. Do I need to take more iron, or is that just a myth?"
No, it's not a myth at all. Iron is a big issue during pregnancy. And if you just delivered a baby, you might be a little bit anemic, because often you lose a lot of blood when you deliver a baby. It's not certainly not an unusual thing. But the answer is get your iron tested by your doctor. Very important. Prenatal care makes a huge difference in outcome. And there are many, many people in Wisconsin and across the country, young women, especially young women that are indigent, who don't get the prenatal care that they need and don't do the other things they need to maintain a healthy baby. And one of the things you want to be tested for is what's the blood count that you have, and if you're deficient, to take an iron tablet. Many women who are pregnant take an iron tablet with their prenatal vitamin. And, of course, some prenatal vitamins have iron in them, too.
Have a myth you need ironed out? Just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our toll-free number is 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. And a listener with us now, Zorba, in West Lafayette, Indiana. Hi.
How you doing?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, I've noticed in the last couple of years that both my fingernails and toenails have become very brittle and break fairly easily. And just wondered if there's anything I can do to offset that, or any kind of a supplement, a vitamin that might help.
Can I ask your age?
Sure. 52.
The nail problems are common problems that people have. And, my aunt and my mother all took gelatin capsules because they thought it would help their nails, and it really doesn't do anything at all. It doesn't help your nails at all. What do you do for a living? Do you get your hands all greasy and dirty?
Typically not. No, I'm in sales and marketing.
So hopefully you won't get it greasy and dirty. Do you do dishes in the sink in your house?
Not very often, no.
Well, who does the dishes in your house if you're not doing them? I mean, that's another story.
Probably
that's
a dishwasher.
The dishwasher,
yeah.
There we go, the dishwasher that we have. One of the reasons I ask that is one of the bad things for nails happens to be dishwasher detergent. It's awful when it comes to nails. So the first thing I tell people is wear gloves whenever you're doing things that you may have a chemical on your nail.
Yeah.
So if you're working in the garden, you're working outside, you're washing dishes, that's one thing.
I ask this age because nails do get more problematic as we get older.
Yeah, but 52 is young.
Yeah, it is. I know it is.
Yeah. You're welcome. You're welcome. That's the other part. 52 is not old. 52 is the new 32, Tom.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is. We're living longer. It's the new 32. Absolutely. People used to die at 49 at the turn of the century.
We can talk about that sometime.
Yes, we will talk about that. Yeah, outside, you and Tom.
Yeah.
Mono on mono. But getting back to the issue, One of the things that you can do that will actually help strengthen the nails, and you may or may not want to do it, is put on clear nail polish. Yes, it absolutely works. It protects the nail. It's useful. You put on clear nail polish. It seems a little strange sometimes when you first do it because you're a guy, but clear nail polish protects the nail. It really does. And you're right on the nail and you do it. And you'll have to ask your wife how to take off the nail polish because you need nail polish remover, and you have to do it about once a week. It doesn't have to be colored. It's clear. But basically, that is the best thing to do. There's no vitamin. There's no supplement. There's nothing you can take. There's nothing over-the-counter that has been proven to work for that. Fungal infections, you'd know if you had one at all. So the answer is no toxins for the nail and then splint it chemically with clear nail polish. That's my recommendation.
So it's no indication of any kind of poor health?
Not at all. And people, you know, people have written treatises on nails and whether or not it's an indication. And there are some nail things that can be an indicator of health. They're very rare, and they're only responsible for probably 1 out of 1,000 or 1 out of 10,000 people who have weak nails. No, it usually is not a vitamin deficiency, which is the first thing people think about.
Yes, I've heard that before.
Yeah, it's not. You go on the net and you'll find 10,000 products to help your nails. Clear Revlon nail polish. And I only recommend Revlon because that's what my mother used to sell at Weebolt's department store in Chicago. So only Revlon nail polish, you know, not CoverGirl or anything else. There's no guys. You got to go to the cosmetic counter and they'll look at you askance when you buy it.
Well, very good. I appreciate your help. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for the call at 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, listener with us in El Paso, Texas. Hi.
Hi there. Dr. Zorba.
Yeah, hi. How can we help?
Well, I'm concerned about the amount of antibiotics that my daughter has had to take in the last year. She's 6.5 years old, but last summer she got, in two separate occasions, two different ear infections, and so she had to take two doses last summer. This year at school, she got strep throat, and she had to take antibiotics, and then about a month later, she had a cold that turned into an ear infection with an eye infection. So that was another round of antibiotics, which was like the 10-day supply. And I'm concerned that she's taking too much.
Right,
and is there
right.
something that you could recommend? Or
I would be concerned too. Let's separate these out. Let's talk about ear infections because that was responsible for 3 of the 4 courses. So first of all, let's put in strep throat. I think you need to take antibiotics. We worry about rheumatic fever, although that strain of strep doesn't seem to be around. But strep you want to get rid of when kids are in school because it can spread like wildfire. So strep is one thing. Put that off to the side.
Yes.
Ear infections, they're responsible for 3 out of 4. Here's the skinny. It's been shown in numerous studies that antibiotics for ear infections reduce the pain and the child crying by about 24 hours. But the outcome for 95% of all ear infections is the same with antibiotics and without antibiotics. So let me explain. In Europe, they don't give antibiotics for ear infections. Now, if the person has 104 fever and they're screaming and yelling, I'd give an antibiotic for the ear infection. But if your child is just feverish and has chills and they go into the doctor and they say, well, it looks to me like an ear infection, you can wait. You can absolutely wait because most ear infections are viral. 85% of them are viral. If you actually tap the ear, put a needle into the ear in a study, and you take out the fluid, you find out most of them are viral and not bacterial, and that's why we give antibiotics for a bacterial infection. So if you're concerned that your daughter is getting too many antibiotics, I would not give antibiotics for the ear infection. I'd say, let's wait and see what happens. And kids get better.
Okay, and I always ask the doctor, can we wait this out? And then they always say, no, you have to take the antibiotic.
They're wrong. They're wrong. It's clear and simple. They are wrong. You don't have to take the antibiotics. You can wait it out. And all they have to do is look at the literature. There's an NIH committee that looked at ear infections and whether or not we overuse antibiotics. And the answer is we do. So your daughter may just have ears that turn slightly pink or slightly red. Now, if there's a bulging red eardrum with, once again, a fever of 104, I'm going to treat it differently than if she has a fever of like 100 or 102. How high was her fever?
Oh, just the last time, it was only about 101.
And they gave an antibiotic.
Yes, and then I get nervous and I give it to her because.
Yeah. Have you? No. Do you like this doctor a lot?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, she's seen a couple of different doctors,
yeah.
actually.
What you want to do is you want to go to a doctor who is comfortable with not prescribing antibiotics. This may be the wrong doctor for you.
Okay.
You know, if they say, oh, it's a slight ear infection, we have to treat it, I don't think that's good enough. I don't want a slight ear infection treated. I want a slight ear infection watched. I only want the rip-roaring ones treated. Your daughter is getting too many antibiotics. You are correct. The doctor is wrong.
One other thing, prevention of ear infections. Besides now that she's been putting these little wax ear buds in when she swims, but is there a prevention for getting these ear infections?
Ear infections come from the nasal cavity. They really come from the nose and the mouth. The earbuds that are put in are not going to do anything. They may work with the external infections if she had it, but they're not going to work with the internal infections. We don't have any good evidence of how you prevent ear infections. If you keep your child in a sterile environment away from other children, that'll work the best.
That's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen. So good luck, and keep her healthier by fewer antibiotics.
Thank you for your help. Thank you very much.
We appreciate the call. Thank you. Before we get out of here for the week, Zorba, why don't you grab your official Judge Zorba gavel?
I got it. I got it, Tom. It's right in my hand.
Because we have another case to settle.
Okay, I'm ready.
Today's case comes to us from Chuck in Missouri, who's debating his wife on whether or not coffee constitutes a daily serving of water. Chuck writes, "My wife says that when I drink coffee, that does not get absorbed as water would be. She further says that if one is to consume X glasses of water per day, drinking coffee does not count. I say coffee is water with a tiny amount of coffee flavoring. Who is right?"
All right. As the judge with the gavel, I am ready to rule. Husband right, wife wrong. Coffee is a liquid. And if you're actually going to keep track of 6 to 8 glasses of liquid a day, then it can count as one of your 6 to 8 glasses of liquid a day. So in this case, I award the husband the award.
Yeah. The listener should know that Judge Zorba is a very heavy coffee drinker.
I am not biased with this in the least. I am only giving an accurate statement of truth.
If you're in hot water and need Judge Zorba to settle your case, just add it to our docket by sending your affidavit or email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Zorba, we'll see you next week.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or find us on Facebook.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Executive producer Adam Friedrich and technical director Brad Kohlberg, or as they're known around WPR offices, Turner and Hooch, are the two guys on the other side of the glass producing this hour. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0609Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.